Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into some really interesting material, excerpts from a novel with a title that definitely makes you stop and think. Tabu Hovardali Katabi.
Yeah, it translates roughly to Taboo, the Book of Debauchery, or maybe the Book of the Playboy. It certainly signals we're heading into complex territory.
Right. And our job here, based on the pages you, the listener, shared with us, is to really unpack this world. We want to pull out the main characters, see how their lives tangle together, and maybe most importantly, try to understand what this taboo is all about.
So we'll meet Can. He seems, initially anyway, pretty quiet, maybe a bit uncertain.
And then there's his friend, Samet, who's the opposite, very confident, worldly, maybe a bit cynical.
Definitely cynical. And their lives get complicated by Ayla, a young woman Can forms a connection with, and later, Tuzba, who brings in a whole other layer of, well, trouble.
So it really sets up this clash, doesn't it? Different ways of looking at life, love, relationships. We get to see these philosophies play out through their interactions.
Let's start with those first meetings. The book introduces Can and Ayla pretty simply, actually, on a minibus.
Yeah, during Ramadan. And they have this quiet moment after breaking the fast. Can offers her a cigarette.
And her response tells you something straight away. She says she can't really smoke at home, but out here, it's okay.
Right. She even mentions her parents know she smokes, but they kind of pretend they don't because they haven't caught her red-handed at home. It's this little insight into navigating rules, finding small freedoms.
Yeah, a little bit of everyday rebellion, maybe.
And on that same ride, we get a bit more about her. She mentions the vocational high school she went to.
Which often means a focus on practical skills, maybe less preparation for university exams.
And she confirms that Kanaya wanted to be a veterinarian, but failed the entrance exams. A common story, really.
But her love for animals seems real. She talks about fish, having a big aquarium.
Ken even mentions he had a cat, Samilo. It paints Ayla as someone with simple dreams, maybe a bit limited by her circumstances.
Now contrast that with Ken and Samet's world. We meet them at work, in a locksmith shop.
You can almost picture it, keys everywhere, long counter, boss's chair. And their dynamic becomes clear pretty fast when they get paid.
Yeah, they get their weekly pay in envelopes from the boss, this old man. And Samet, he's immediately unhappy.
Complaining about the amount, right?
Yeah.
Especially after working hard during Barum.
Says he was sweating buckets, working his tail off, and for what? This little bit of money?
And Can, his response is just minimal, yes. You're right. Just simple agreement.
That really highlights Samet. He's focused on the practical, the payoff. He feels like the world owes him more.
And this feeds directly into his whole philosophy on life, and especially on women, which he shares pretty openly.
His core line is something like, we're only here once, right? Whatever you live, that's your profit.
It's all about grabbing experience now. And he sets himself up as the expert on women.
Which is where you see the stark difference with Cam. Samet talks about buying a girl a cola.
His reason is purely transactional. To sleep with her?
Yeah.
No bones about it.
And Can is just quiet. He thinks maybe you buy a cola for a girl you love. A totally different mindset.
Yeah, his short answers suggest he's not really engaging with Samet's worldview yet. Maybe just taking it in.
These early scenes really lay the groundwork. Can's sort of idealism versus Samet's hard-edged pragmatism. It's set up for a clash.
And it doesn't take long for Ayla to reappear in Can's life. Unexpectedly.
She turns up at the locksmith shop. Her door lock's broken. Can sees her there.
But again, Can holds back. He sees she's busy showing fabric to her mother and aunt.
Right, for her cousin Zara's wedding curtains. Engagement soon, wedding in 5 months. Big family stuff.
So Can figures it's not the right time. He doesn't want to intrude.
But Ayla sees him, remembers him, and invites him to the wedding or maybe the engagement. Just a small thing, but it keeps that door open.
Then their minibus rides continue. They seem to get more comfortable talking.
Until one day, Ayla gets off and just says, see you tomorrow. Simple words, but for Can.
It's like a jolt of hope. Massive.
And it spurs him into action. The next day, he deliberately waits for her at the stop. He even lets other people get on first, just so he can stand near her.
Ayla notices, asks him why he waited. She explains she was a bit late because of a tricky customer. It shows she's paying attention to him, too.
And this leads to their first proper planned meeting at the Devon Patisserie.
Which feels a bit more formal, maybe traditional. Can gets there early. He's clearly hopeful.
He even brings her a gift. A hobo cassette. Ibrahim Tatlas's.
A popular singer. Seems like a thoughtful gesture, showing he remembered something she liked.
And during this meeting, Can opens up a bit about his own dreams. He wants to be a novelist. famous one.
Tells her he's already written one. Send it off to TRT, the state broadcaster, hoping they'll make it into something.
Hey, he's been waiting 8 months. They told him to wait a year.
And Isla's advice is very practical. Just get it back. Whether they use it or not, get the manuscript back.
It's that hint of her grounded nature again, compared to Can's big dreams.
They also talk about where to meet next. Isla prefers the second place they met.
Why? Because people don't stare so much there. It's easier to talk.
And her suggesting they meet there again really boosts Can. It feels like confirmation she genuinely wants to see him.
So things seem to be progressing. They even admit their initial awkwardness. Can thought he talked too much.
And Isla felt she came across as too forward. They have a toast to our meeting. Seems like they're building something real.
Isla gives him some really nice compliments too. Calls him gentle, smart, completely different.
Says he understands people. Can feels encouraged, gives her the credit for bringing that out in him.
But then things shift. Can notices Isla becoming quiet, distant, thoughtful.
And here's where Can's own insecurities kick in hard. He interprets her silence through his lens. Is she having second thoughts about him? Because of him? Maybe because he's not perfect.
He starts thinking about societal pressures, maybe this idea of a taboo related to his own self-image. It's planting a seed of doubt.
This throws him into turmoil. He feels them drifting apart, this sense of despair creeping back in.
He feels he has to do something, make a move, before it's too late. Even though he's scared, you can feel the weight of it on him.
Meanwhile, as Can's dealing with all this with Isla, Summit's just living his philosophy. Full steam ahead.
We see it clearly with German Zeynep. She shows up, back from Germany, has a fancy black Mercedes.
Offers to take Summit back with her, right? But he refuses. Says it's not his kind of place. He's rooted where he is.
And he's still got his own mess going on the divorce that isn't happening because his wife won't agree.
But with Zeynep, he's all charm. Flirtatious, joking about how their relationship started the day they split up.
He's just comfortable in that dynamic. And Can sees this, he watches them.
And it makes him feel like such an outsider. He doesn't know what it's like to be wanted like that. He feels almost indebted to Samet for even showing him this side of life exists.
And then Samet comes out with this boast, his supposed world record.
Ugh. Yeah. Sex in the Mercedes, near a cemetery at night. Claiming 9 ejaculations in an hour and a half.
It's crude, but it perfectly sums up his whole worldview. Conquest, performance, that's the measure of success for him.
And he takes it even further later on. Brags about seducing a 16-year-old girl.
And not just any girl. The daughter of a mosque imam who wore a headscarf.
Which, culturally, that's crossing a serious line. There's a lot of weight attached to that.
Exactly. And when Can expresses some concern, you know, pity the girl, Summit just brushes it off. What pity.
His view is just brutal. Women are all the same, driven by physical need. If she doesn't get it from me, she'll get it from someone else.
He even makes that cynical link to their job. We're locksmiths for a reason, implying they unlock more than doors.
No mercy in this world. That's his mantra.
But Ken pushes back just a little, at least not the imam's daughter. It shows he still has some kind of line, some moral boundary Summit seems to lack completely.
Summit is basically attacking everything Can believes about love. He thinks physical attraction is love, essentially.
And women. Interchangeable objects for desire. He tells Can straight up that his emotional approach is naive.
This collision course really hits hard when Can tries to solidify things with Isla.
He tells her, kind of awkwardly, that he wants them to be friends.
Which confuses Isla, right? She's like, we're friends.
So King clarifies he means, like, spending time together properly outside the minibus routine.
Isla agrees. She says she's used to him, doesn't want to lose him, feels different when he's around, which sounds okay.
But then she drops this bombshell, says that after meeting him, she hates men and her heart is empty.
Yeah, Can is totally lost. He hears, if I wanted men, why would I be with you? And his insecurity just takes over.
Is she insulting him? Is this proof that Summit was right about women all along? He starts filtering everything through that cynical lens.
And then the other shoe drops. Hard. He finds out the truth from Zira.
Zira tells him Isla has ended any romantic possibility. Said there was no real bond, just friendship, so she felt free.
And the kicker. Isla is now dating Semil.
Semil. The guy Can saw her dancing with at Zira's engagement party. Ouch.
Can is absolutely devastated. And Summit, predictably, is right there with the, I told you so.
Insisting Isla was playing him, that Can just doesn't get it. Women only want one thing.
Can spirals, thinks about suicide again, feels completely adrift.
And he interprets Ayla's choice through this dark filter he's developed, society's laws of nature. power, money, looks win out over perceived weakness, his own perceived flaws.
This is where his idea of the taboo really hardens. Loving someone like him, flawed as he sees himself, goes against the social order. It's forbidden territory.
And with Can hitting rock bottom, Sumet sees his chance. He pushes Can hard to just ditch his ideals and adopt his way of life.
Tells Can he needs to learn that he, Sumet, can juggle multiple women. Calls Can a stubborn donkey for resisting.
Can is just torn apart inside. He feels this intense pressure from Sumet, this need to prove his manhood or something.
He starts questioning everything. If he hasn't had sex outside of a loving context, does he even understand a woman, understand the world?
The pain of rejection, Sumet's constant pressure, it pushes him over the edge. He makes a decision.
He tells Sumet he'll try it. His way. Ask for one more chance. He feels he has to act, to break through his own contradictions. Prove something.
Which leads directly to what we're calling the experiment with Tuzba. Can trying to live out Sumet's philosophy.
So the plan is set. They go to Sybil's place, specifically so Can can meet Tuzba and, well, follow Sumet's script.
The scene is set. Sybil's house, four people drinking. Can is clearly a bundle of nerves, but he's determined now.
And we get this great insight into his head. He's trying to act cool, experienced, but feels like a total amateur and untrained competitor.
His thoughts are all over the place. Enjoy it. Versus, you'll be punished. He's terrified about his performance.
She talks to Tuzba, asks her age. She says 20. He thinks she looks younger, maybe 16.
He gets a sense she's done this before. She's just waiting for him to make a move. He even admits to her that he's nervous.
And the outcome. The excerpts are clear. They have sex. It's difficult for Can at first, but he manages it. Find satisfaction.
And afterwards, he feels proud. Like he accomplished something significant, even if it wasn't the romance he once craved.
He actually wishes Sumet could have seen him. He wants that validation for stepping into Sumet's world. It's complicated.
But this experiment, this dive into Sumet's world, has immediate and serious consequences. Things spiral fast.
First off, shortly after this, Sumet loses his job driving a taxi.
Yeah, the implication is he wasn't earning enough, probably still prioritizing chasing women, though Sumet seems to accept it, doesn't blame the boss.
Then, the big shock. Tuzba shows up at Can's place late at night, out of nowhere.
Can's stunned. How did she even find him?
And Tuzba drops a massive bomb. She's pregnant.
Yeah.
And the father is Semil.
Semil, the same guy who's now with Isla. It's an incredibly tangled mess.
Tuzba is terrified. Her family back home has no idea she's even in Ankara.
Yeah.
If they find out.
The fear is real. Disownment, maybe even violence. Especially in certain contexts, this kind of situation could be incredibly dangerous for her.
She needs money. A lot of it. $3,000, the text says, for an abortion. And there's a deadline. Before the Kribid Biram holiday and before the pregnancy progresses too far.
And she turns to Can. Trusts him. Calls him a very good person. She needs his help to get the money and, crucially, to take her to Izmir for the procedure, possibly to face her family there.
And Can. Despite everything, despite Samil's involvement, he agrees. He sees Tuzba as a good person, maybe the best girl he knows in that moment. His empathy just kicks in.
It's quite telling, even after trying to be cynical like Sumet, Can's fundamental decency, his instinct to help someone vulnerable, wins out.
So the plan to get money. First idea. Can decides to sell his brother's video camera, a Panasonic M7 VHS, a valuable item back then.
He cooks up a cover story for his brother about some failed business idea.
Sumet gets involved. He's skeptical because he'll actually sell it for enough or quickly enough, but he agrees to help. And importantly, he says he'll protect Can.
Shows that loyalty is still there, somewhere under the surface cynicism.
But the camera plan seems shaky. Not enough money, maybe too slow. So Sumet proposes something way more extreme.
Yeah, steal two cows, or bulls, from the animal market right before Kribid Biram when it's chaotic and prices are high.
And Can just agrees. Let's do it. No hesitation. It's a huge leap for him.
Sumet even jokes about it, saying Isla must be his motivation, trying to make sense of Can's sudden willingness to commit a serious crime. It shows how desperate Can is to help Tuzba.
Now they need a truck for the cattle rustling plan.
Right. They go to a friend, Sari Ghazi. Spin some story about helping a girl move house.
Ghazi's hesitant. Turns out he pawned the truck for gambling money. But he agrees to try and get it back for a couple of days. Sumet's impatient, dismissive of Ghazi's own troubles.
So Can's juggling all this. He needs time off work, needs more cash.
He lies to his boss at the locksmith shop. Invents a story about his uncle dying in Martin. Gets a few days leave.
And he sells his own gold, a bracelet, earrings. Throws his personal valuables into the pot. Really underscores his commitment.
Then he meets Tuzba. They head to the bus station. Tuba almost calls her uncle, but chickens out. The fear is palpable.
They buy tickets, travel overnight to Izmir.
Arrive in the evening, make their way to her uncle's neighborhood. It's described as a gisekandu area, sort of a shanty town. Suggests a potentially rough environment.
They get to the uncle's house. The aunt opens the door, sees them, and she's visibly shocked.
And then the absolute gut punch. Tuzba's father and brother are right there, inside the house, watching TV.
The aunt basically panics, shoves them into the kitchen, whispering frantically, warns them the men are dangerous, might even be armed, if they find out about the pregnancy, about Can.
They could kill them both. That's the reality she throws at them. She tells them they cannot stay, need to go to someone else's house, Aishi's place, immediately.
And for Can, this is a brutal wake-up call. He realizes maybe Samet was right about him being naive, but not about women naive, about the sheer physical danger, the life and death stakes of the situation he'd walked into.
The aunt practically pushes them out the door before they're discovered. Intense.
And the fallout from all these choices, all these risks, starts hitting hard.
We find out Samet gets arrested. It's not explicitly stated it was for the bull theft.
But the timing makes it almost certain. That plan, born out of Can's desperation and the Samet's recklessness, lands Samet in jail.
Then there's that scene back at Sybil's place, a big confrontation. Can is losing it, shouting, "Down with taboos," just venting all his frustration.
Samet tries to calm him down, restrain him.
And in the scuffle, Can accidentally catches Samet's tooth, makes it bleed. Samet snaps, slaps Can hard.
Which causes serious damage. They end up at the hospital. Can's right eardrum is ruptured. His hearing is permanently affected.
It's a physical manifestation of the violence their situation has bred. Samet feels terrible, but Can tells him it's not his fault. That bond, however damaged, is still there.
Fast forward 6 weeks. Samet's in prison in Changkuria. Can goes to visit him.
Samet's angry. Blames Can, "You ruined me." But he also asks if Can's okay. Still concerned, even from prison.
Can is just crushed by guilt. Feels completely responsible for Samet's predicament.
And it's around this time that Can seems to really grapple with that central idea, the taboo.
He starts connecting all the dots. Ayla choosing Samil, his own feelings of inadequacy, Samet's harsh philosophy, the danger with Tuba. It all feeds into this concept.
He sees the taboo as society judging imperfection, judging anyone who doesn't fit the mold, like himself, maybe seeing himself as sakat, as flawed. He thinks this taboo blinds everyone to what's real, like genuine love.
He uses that analogy, right? The trickster pigeons, the talented ones are caged, the ordinary ones fly free.
His interpretation is that thinking and feeling deeply traps you, burdens you with responsibility. While being thoughtless, superficial, gives you a kind of freedom that aligns with those brutal laws of nature, power, beauty, winning out.
It makes him feel incredibly isolated, like he's seeing this darkness, this societal disease that others don't. He says he doesn't even want love for himself anymore. He just wants the taboo itself to be broken.
And then, just when he thinks he's figured it all out, comes the final devastating twist.
Ayla shows up at the shop again, but she's not looking for Can, she's looking for Samet.
Zira sees her, follows her, and then reveals the truth to Can, a truth that completely shatters Can's understanding.
Zaire says Ayla was looking for Samet that day. She seemed distant, so Can's whole interpretation about it being about him, about his flaws, about the taboo against him, it was wrong.
Zaire even says Isla's mother is sick with worry because they haven't heard from Samet, and Ayla wants revenge on Samet.
And then the absolute contradiction. Zira insists Ayla had been madly in love with Can, even put his picture up on her wall.
Which means Ayla's shift, her turning away from Can and towards Samil, wasn't about Can's perceived flaws at all. It was triggered by something involving Samet.
Can is just floored. Nothing makes sense anymore. Which version of Ayla is real? What really happened with Samet? He can't reconcile any of it.
He ends up wandering the streets all night, finds himself back where the whole story started, Eula Square.
He plays out confrontations in his head with Ayla, with Samet, but realizes he has nothing solid to stand on. Ayla could accuse him of hypocrisy because of Tuzba. Samet could just throw his cynical theories back at him.
He's trapped. Back at square one, lost in a fog of contradiction and despair, unable to grasp the truth about love, society, or the very taboo he thought he understood.
It's a really powerful, unsettling way to leave things. Leaves you, the listener, holding all these pieces.
So that's our deep dive into these excerpts from Tabu Huvardali Shinkatavi. We've tracked Can, Samet, Ayla, Tuzba through their tangled lives, their clashing views, the drama, the danger, and this constant threat of the taboo.
Yeah, the source material throws so many different takes on love, truth, what society expects, sometimes completely contradictory takes. After hearing all this, you have to wonder whose perspective, if any, seems right. Is love this pure thing Kant initially hopes for, or is Sonnet closer to the mark with his cynical view of nature's laws?
It definitely makes you think, doesn't it? I mean, Kant's world feels so confusing, full of mixed signals and pressures. How do you, listening now, navigate that in your own life? How do you sort out what's real versus what's maybe fake? Or just someone else's interpretation.
Are there unspoken rules, these taboos, in your world that shape choices, maybe without you even fully realizing it? Things society deems unacceptable or people it deems unworthy.
And think about Kant's ending point back in Euless Square. Totally lost, unable to reconcile all the conflicting stories. Does escaping one kind of trap, like his own insecurity, or maybe this societal taboo he perceived, just lead you into another kind of confusion?
Or is there a way through, a path to actually understanding things, to finding some kind of freedom? What does it really take in the end to break a taboo, whether it's societal or internal?
A heavy question to ponder. Something to definitely chew on long after this dive is over.